going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to NBA Stories. My name is Nick Nasby here with the Philly Bull himself, the man who is about to be very disappointed by Bryce Harper not winning the MVP, Mark DeQuilla. How are you?
I'm good. You really don't think he's got a shot?
No, I think he's got it. I don't know who the fuck else would.
he better seal the deal because I got
it. Is it weird, by the way, Mark? Is it weird that they do the MVP for baseball after the season's over? They do that in NBA too, though. I always find it strange that they don't do it before the playoffs. If it's a regular season award, like, why don't you do it before the fucking end of the regular season?
Nick, that's just me, though. Everything that the MLB does in terms of marketing the sport is terribly strategized.
Wrong.
It is awful. They announced the Gold Glove Awards in the middle of a Monday Night Football game. I mean, they just do nothing to appeal to their audience whatsoever. As far as any of their award announcements, any of their scheduling, it's brutal.
Baseball's boring.
Yeah, they don't pander at all to the casual fan. They just
isn't it weird though? And I know this is a basketball podcast, but we'll get back to it. But isn't it weird how I know we're different ages, but dude, when I was a kid, I loved watching baseball, like Pujols, fucking, you know, all those guys, Manny, Ortiz, right? Like all the big names back then, they were so exciting to watch, like Miggy in his prime, you know, like Verlander in his prime, all those names. And now it's just like, fuck baseball. and there's so much talent in the league still. It's just like, still fuck baseball. Who cares?
It sucks because, and we're not going to talk too much about this anymore, but I am a diehard baseball fan. I'm like one of those nerdy baseball statistic diehard fans, but I still see the other side where it's baseball has not for years now had any sort of casual fans. You either have me who's obsessed with baseball and that's it. There's just, they don't allow for casual fans, and it's a problem. It's a marketing problem. None of their players get marketed. They basically had Tatis be the only guy appealing to casual fans and they punish him for it. So, I mean, you can't have it. Exactly.
Ohtani's the other one, but it's like, yeah, the problem, and we'll go into this also, is like West Coast bias, dude.
Oh, for
nobody
sure.
Nobody cares about anybody in California. Sorry, Cali. Like, you're the only state over there that people really pay attention to. Everything about the schedules for basically every piece of entertainment in America is catered for the Eastern Coast. Shifting gears here now to an actual exciting sport that's been doing a lot of excitement. Things. I know that's not how you say those words in that order, but man, what a couple of weeks, you know? We've run into some really significant storylines. The big thing that we're going to go into tonight, folks, is this is our next up episode. You know, we're going into the dog days of the season. We're going to get to a place where, yeah, we could drone on about different fucking headlines and things that are going on and in the NBA on any given day. But, like, the real big stuff is kind of, like, handled, right? I think Bill Simmons has that taken care of. I want to talk about some topics. You know, the only thing that I want to talk to you about today, Mark, is what we saw in Denver, I think on Monday night, where, I mean, Nikola Jokic just absolutely blindsiding Markieff Morris after a relatively cheap shot from Markieff. But, I mean, an absolutely inexcusable move from Jokic. Put him on his ass or on his face. Got it in a little bit of a scuffle. Jimmy Butler went full fucking Marlon Brando on his ass. He's like, you disrespected my daughter in front of me on her wedding day. It's like, dude, shut the fuck up. The thing is, like, first of all, they're acting like fake gangsters, which bugs me. I know Jimmy was, and if anybody's an actual real thug in the NBA, it's Jimmy Butler. But even by that stretch of the imagination, like, you're not going to fight the guy. You're going to run up on him until someone pulls you away. That's how NBA fights happen. Like, one person makes one shot, and then everyone else pulls everybody else, and everybody acts tough while everybody's pulling them back from trying to fight the other person because neither one actually wants to fucking fight each other. We've seen it a million times, you know, and that's what happened there. The picture that got me the best was when the fucking Heat are waiting outside the Nuggets locker room. Did you see that one?
Yes.
They're standing outside the locker room waiting. I'm like, okay, that's a little bit concerning. if I'm a Nuggets player. Like, that's okay. I'm a little bit concerned if I'm seeing that. But, dude, I don't know. If you were to put the Morris twins versus Nikola Jokic and his fucking Serbian gangster brother with neck tattoos, who you got in a fight?
I don't, I don't know, man. The Morris,
I do, bro. That dude's gonna pull a switch out, bro. What the fuck? That dude's an actual gangster. Like,
the Jokic brothers are some scary dudes. If you haven't seen pictures, I mean, I highly suggest you don't Google them because you might not sleep tonight. But
we'll make it the post when we post this. We'll make it the post as his fucking brother's face.
That'll get some clicks for sure. But what I just I think's an interesting storyline is these two teams play again. And they play not that far from now, so it's gonna be fresh in the mind. It's November 29th on NBA TV. That game is gonna be interesting, and I don't think we see it often in the NBA. It's not like baseball, which we were just talking about before, where you get these sort of like feuds that last into their next series where players get thrown at and whatnot. You're gonna see guaranteed some sort of a scrum or two in that game. I would say that's pretty much a lock. And I think that's going to be must-watch TV. We really don't get that in the NBA these days. And, like, obviously we don't want to condone what Jokic did or what Morris did for that matter. But I think it'll create an interesting storyline moving forward. I wish these two teams were, like, actual rivals rather than really having zero, not even being in the same conference. But imagine a playoff series between these two and NBA Finals. It's not out of the question once Jamal Murray returns. The Heat look fucking good right now, man.
Yeah, I mean, they were getting their they're getting trounced. Were they? Wait, they were winning that game? I can't remember. Were they up or down?
I think I think they only have one loss at the moment. I could be wrong.
Yeah, they got absolutely worked by the Celtics. I remember that. The action by Jokic, I get it. I think it's in just the sense of respect, tolerable. I get it, you know. You're an MVP, though. I was telling some guys at work today the same thing. It's like,
yeah.
Listen, man, you're the MVP of the league. I don't give a shit what they do to you. I don't care how they elbow you or they hit you in the dick or whatever the case is. You have to restrain yourself. There's just no excuse. You know, think about if you want to – if you're getting frustrated, Jokic, about getting hit, maybe call Shaq up on the fucking phone and ask him how his MVP season went. When he's getting absolutely just mauled by absolutely everybody, the cheapest shots, getting hit, you know, in every which way, everybody's trying to take him down. Dude, like, it's part of the game. The Morris twins are notorious for it,
well,
both of them.
Exactly. And I think I talked about this last week. We were talking about the Mitchell Robinson effect on Joel Embiid in that Knicks-Sixers game. And you have these players in the league, and the Morris twins are the perfect example of this. They're Pat Beverley's. Their sole purpose is to get under the skin of the opponent, Lance Stephenson. And I think it's so true when you say that when you are a level of player like a Nikola Jokic, you can't let them win in that situation. You know what I mean? Jokic puts up 40 and 12, and that's him winning the matchup. Markieff Morris getting Jokic to do that is him winning his matchup. You know what I mean? He's not going to put up even 15 points in a game. All his goal is to get under the skin of the best player on the floor, like a Jokic. And in that case,
Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, it's like he has nothing to lose. You know what I mean?
Jalen Ramsey. It's tossed, a cornerback mindset.
Exactly. He gets tossed for their next 10 games. You think that's really going to impact the Heat that much? No. The Nuggets, it kills them. That's an automatic loss in that game next week or whenever they get the suspension.
I think it's like tonight or tomorrow, but. Yeah, I mean, eat that suspension. He deserves it. You can't hit a guy when his back's turned like that. It's just not. It's unacceptable. You know, I get it. Again, from a standpoint of somebody who has been in a basketball game before, from somebody who is competitive, anybody who is an athlete would understand the response because we've all felt what he felt and know exactly what that's like. But if you are on that level, you're on a pedestal, you get a lot of leeway with the league, you know. You just can't. You just can't, especially against somebody who's going to make a big fucking thing of it. I mean, he got Reggie Millard so hard in that shit. Like, Markieff just fucking Reggie Millard the shit out of him. What'd I do? Oh my God, I can't believe it. What are you mad at me for? You know, it's like, dude, you know exactly what the fuck you did. You know, whatever we didn't see, I'm sure there's more to it.
They threw a fine at Butler too, which I was glad to see that they did that.
Yeah, he shouldn't. He said too much.
No, you can't turn it into that. And like he was in the middle of a full arena going like, let's handle this right now. You know what I mean? You can't be doing that. I almost would have rather them just had done the locker room thing after the game than Butler instigating it like that.
I mean, remember when the Clippers and the Rockets got into that little scrap when I think Harden threw an elbow or something? Yeah. Oh, no, it was when Chris Paul and Beverly caught him with a couple good ones. And it was like Blake and fucking, you know, I don't know, DeAndre. A couple guys are looking for him in the fucking wind tunnel. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, what the fuck did you guys – where do you get off thinking that you're tough now? Blake Griffin, you work at – like, you did comedy shows. You're not tough, you know? Like Chris Paul, dude, like, you're 5'9".
You're the State Farm guy.
What are you going to fucking do? There's a lot of wannabe gangsters in the NBA. There's some real ones, and I get it. Like, Jimmy Butler is actually somebody who I wouldn't fuck with.
Yeah,
so
no.
I totally, like, I'm like, all right, you know, Jimmy, do whatever the fuck you want, dude. Just don't hurt me, you know what I mean? It's like, he's actually kind of he's someone you have to respect just because he's kind of been there.
Yeah.
You know, but who I would not fuck with and where I'm just kind of blown away that it's going this far is I wouldn't fuck with Nikola Jokic's brother, who's got neck tattoos and is clearly just dragged out of Belgrade, just threw him in America and said, hey, don't commit crime. He's not – I don't think he's doing a good job of it. It's just like, what? This man is horrifying. I would never – like, and on top of all of this, Mark, if that's not scary enough, the fact that he's got hand and neck tattoos, he's like as tall as his brother.
Yeah. Isn't there –
like they're the same size.
Isn't there a third one too?
There's three of them. Yeah, okay. There's the one who is, I think one of them has been arrested before. Yeah, like he has like a domestic, you know, assault thing on his record. You know, they both are just tatted up to the fucking eyeballs. Nicholas clearly like the protected little brother, but it's like, dude, these guys are straight up like they look like hitmen.
Yeah,
I would not. The fuck are you trying to do? They already got their tickets for Miami, by the way. They're going. I don't know how the fuck they're not just gonna let them in the stadium. Just be like, no, you can't come in here. Like, no, you can't come in here. Sorry, like we don't want to fucking.
Meanwhile, Marcus will probably have another game. He won't be in attendance. You're gonna have a 3v1 situation. Maybe Jimmy Butler hops in.
I can only imagine the first time that the Nuggets get into an actual brawl, and just immediately just watching both of his brothers just sprint into the fucking court. Like, that's the next step, right? They're just going to sprint onto the fucking court and just start swinging at NBA players. It's the next logical step in this progression, just getting there, you know. And then Silver's going to have to, like, ban both of his brothers from the NBA, and then, all you know, it's going to be a whole thing. The thing that the focus I wanted to make this episode on, though, besides just shitty violence in a sport that doesn't require it, is just, dude, I mean, the last 2 weeks, the season started, what, about 2 weeks ago, something like that, and maybe even longer. I think it's been about a month at this point. We're into the season, but we're seeing a couple things. Number one, we're seeing just a changing of the guard, I would say, you know, from the old stars to the new ones, and it's getting kind of strange for me being 27 years old to see guys who I remember getting drafted starting to get old. It started with the Carmelos and the LeBrons, and then now it's going to like the Westbrooks and like the Blakes, and like the Harden's going to get there. Steph's starting to get, you know, sort of up there, but can't even really talk about him right now because he's absolutely just dazzling still. But it's this new wave of guys, right, coming into the league, and they're just lighting it up immediately. And when we were talking about this draft class, Mark, I don't know if you remember when we were talking about it, but like we weren't very high on this 21 draft class. I thought there's maybe four guys that will come in and probably be pretty good contributors. I thought Cade was probably going to be the number one, and he's performing pretty well. But right now, we're running into a case where there's like five or six guys who are going to be high-level contributors in the NBA. If they stay healthy at the progression they're going, it's going to stay that way. And this is all from the same draft class. I mean, we could be talking about another 2018 right now.
Yeah, I think we're talking about a deep class and a class that is going to exceed expectations. There are expectations when it comes to certain draft classes. Some are low, some are high. This one had a pretty low expectation. I think it's already exceeding that early on, and it's without the two stars really of the class going that far above and beyond. Kate Cunningham only started playing about a week ago, and Jalen Green hasn't been one of these guys we're talking about yet as the key contributors. I'm watching that game right now, actually, Pistons Rockets. God knows how these two teams that have combined for two wins so far this year are playing on ESPN, but I haven't seen Jalen Green or Cade Cunningham make a single shot yet, so that's not a great sign. But we are talking about in this class a lot of guys who are making a name for themselves in ways that I don't think we expected this early on. And I'll start with my guy before you touch on yours, and that's Scottie Barnes in Toronto. Toronto is a mess right now. They don't look great at all. They've had a lot of injuries so far to start the year. Siakam's been out. But Barnes has got to be the front runner for Rookie of the Year at this current moment. He's leading all rookies in points per game and rebounds. 16.5 and 9 rebounds per game. That's phenomenal numbers. That's near all-star numbers if he keeps it up. I think we were both pretty high on him coming out of the class. A lot of people had him as one of the most NBA-ready prospects, great defender, and he's joining a system that prides themselves on defense. So I think that's sort of like worked out really well for him to be able to fill the Siakam void and also learn from OG at the exact same time. He's just in a system that prides itself on defense, which becomes a lot easier to fit in when you're that type of player. Barnes has just really shown me a lot for a 20-year-old. He's very, very young. He can't even buy a legal drink, and he looks like a polished prospect already. And he's doing it on a team that is, although they're not performing well, it's not a rebuild quite like what's going on in Houston and Detroit, for example, where you have these one star player that just got drafted in Jalen Green and Cade Cunningham and not really much else around them. Barnes is playing with some very experienced championship winners that I think is only going to improve his game and help grow his game at a quick pace. I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing such big things from him so early on, is because the Raptors, although they're not a good team, they have these players that are seasoned veterans. They're quality players, and they're just helping him develop on a game-by-game basis.
Scottie's interesting because he's just a classic case of I can't even really call him a hybrid post because he's not. He's technically characterized as a power forward. He is 6'9". You know, he's more of a dual forward in the way that he's been performing. But the really interesting thing to me about Scottie Barnes is, like, you're actually wrong, dude. I wasn't that high on him when he came out of college. I didn't know what he was going to be. I saw Patrick Williams just like coming back, you know, the year after. And I like Patrick Williams, but you know what I'm saying? Like, this was a work in progress. This kid came in and he's absolutely just running out of the gates with it. And he's taking this this Rookie of the Year and he just you know, throwing it, and he's just making it his, you know. And that's the same case. You could also make that case for Duarte right now.
Yeah.
I think it's funny because, like, Duarte's losing cred because he's 23, which I just think is insane, because what is it, 10 years ago, that wouldn't even been a case. Like, no one would have cared if you were a senior or a junior. But ever since just the blow-up of one-and-dones, ever since, like, 06 when it started, now if you're more than a freshman, people are like, well, what's wrong with him? Why wasn't he in the league yet, you know? He was a polished product coming in, and he's clearly showing that. But that's not really who I wanted to talk about. I want to talk about Evan Mobley. Do you remember when we were talking about Evan Mobley last year?
Yeah.
During the tournament.
He was our clip.
It's it's funny that, you know, it's coming back up because he was one of those guys who, what he's doing in Cleveland is only going to get better. He has uncapped potential. And the way that he's performing is with the kind of confidence that you would usually have reserved for about a 25, 26-year-old, right? His numbers obviously remain to grow, but it's the way that he plays. And you know, I was watching a Cavaliers game just a couple days ago, and I'm watching him, you know, on the same court with Jared Allen, and they run those two guys together sometimes. And personally, I don't really like that concept, but whatever, just do a two-post kind of deal. But he's got vision. He's got a little bit of a handle. We knew he could shoot, but he's actually shooting, you know, from 15 to sometimes 20 feet out relatively easily. And the big thing for me is the defense. And he's also playing, you know, defense on a perimeter and on a post level. He's averaging a steal a game as well. And there's a lot to what he's doing. And this is something that I saw out of him coming out of San Diego. This is something that I saw out of him coming out of Southern Cal. And it's just translating at every step. I don't see how it could really get any, you know, how it can really change for him. The only problem, and this is kind of the case where you run into with Barnes as well, is that they're just like, they're in fucking shitty organizations right now. I mean, the Cavs are just whatever. What are the Cavs?
Yeah, nothing without Sexton now, too.
And ever since LeBron left, they're just back to the heap, the scrap heap. They're outside of Minnesota, maybe the worst run franchise in the league. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're just basement dwellers. You don't ever anticipate them being good, unfortunately, for the city.
If you had to guess the Cavs' record right now, what would you take a guess?
2-7.
Really?
Yeah.
You'd be pleasantly shocked at how much of an impact Evan Mobley has made early on. They are the five seed in the Eastern Conference, 7-4.
Yeah.
They went on. I remember seeing that they had gotten hot because I watched actually the Hornets-Cavs game, and the Cavs beat them in a close one down the stretch, and I saw something like Cleveland was on like a 4-game home winning streak or something like that. But I mean, all that's going to go down. All hope is going down the toilet with the Sexton injury.
Mobley's got 11 right now in 12 minutes against the Wizards. The 7-3 Wizards, by the way. Which is just like, the NBA is weird, dude. The beginning of the season is so strange. That's why it's like you can't even really do anything about it. You know, the Bucks are 5-6. The Hornets were the best team last week, and now they're 5-7. Like, they've lost a bunch straight. You know, the worst team in the league, obviously, is the Pistons, but the Hawks are right there with them, and they're playing badly. Like, there's just not – it takes so long for it to get kind of back on track. I think one of the teams to really talk about, though, that I think we should probably take a detour here and have a conversation about, at least for a minute, is the fucking the Warriors, dude. They're back.
Yeah.
They're fucking back. And I love it. And I'm so happy that they're playing well again, because the only reason people didn't like the Warriors for the time that they became the villains is because of Kevin Durant. He's gone. Everyone else on that team now is homegrown. You know what I mean? And isn't that what we loved about them, though? I mean, that's what I loved about them.
Yeah.
Is that they were a team of homegrown talent. They drafted and they built from within. They got Steve Kerr, a completely unproven coach who we all knew about his three-point prowess. He comes in and does the same thing with them that he used to want to do for himself. And now they're back to where they were in the beginning. And we're seeing the emergence of just new talent now. New talent that if you have a magnetic star in Steph Curry, you're going to get a lot of guys around him who want to play with Steph Curry. You know, Jordan Poole's probably the best example of that right now. He's averaging damn near 20 points a game. He's filling in for the injured Klay Thompson, and Klay's coming back, by the way. And we're going to have to deal with that too. So it's like, you know, there's so many things going on in Oakland right now, or what are they, like San Francisco now? Whatever, you know what I mean. The Warriors are 9-1. They're by a wide margin the best team in the league right now. They have the Steph Curry playing the best basketball he's played probably since his MVP season. Which is crazy to say because he played fucking off the charts last year too. He just got slept on.
Who's my MVP pick again? Because right now,
Steph?
Yeah, and I believe he is the bet. He's moved to the betting favorite early on. Still a lot of time to go, obviously, and I think maybe his numbers will come down a little once Clay comes. Maybe not even. Maybe they'll go up. Who knows? The other guy too, I wanted to, because I'm just curious on your outlook on this. Isn't it crazy to think how much Draymond Green's role has sort of shifted on this team? Like at this point in his career, he offers nothing offensively in the points category, but he's like having the best. He's one of the best passing players in the entire league at this point, and he's still rebounding almost getting 9 boards a game. I mean, Draymond is a key contributor. Although, if you look in the point category, you're like, oh, he's underachieving. It's just he's become a very different player.
Well, points wise, he's not even really doing that bad. He's averaging almost 8 a game, and that's about what you can expect from him, you know. But you're right in the sense that 7.9 points, 7.3 assists. You know, that's where it is. Draymond's effect and the reason why he's going to be one of the most frustrating Hall of Famers ever, because I don't really agree, but I think he's going to make it, you know, at the end when it's all said and done. It's going to be a very, very similar to a Dennis Rodman situation where it's just like you kind of just have to put him in.
Good,
it was just such an impact on such a great team for so long. But, you know, the thing about Draymond right now, and I think we saw the resurgence begin in Tokyo, you know, at the Olympics. I know it's kind of crazy to compare what you do in the NBA to what you do in the Olympics, but if you saw how important he was to that gold medal run, it's pretty clear that he had one of the biggest impacts on that team for somebody who was putting in like 5 points, maybe like 4 boards and 3 assists. And yet he was one of the clear captains, one of the clear leaders. It has so much more to do with the way that he composes himself and the way that he constructs himself around the team. You know, the fact that they're intimidated by him, they respect him, they want to play with him, and more importantly, they just don't want to play against him. You know, nobody wants to play against Draymond because he also, let's not forget, he's guarding 1-5 relatively easily. You know, 1-3 is a lock, 4 is a lock on the post, and 5 is the only one he ever has any issues with, but he still gets that one pretty well. You know, I think defensively, you can make a case for him to be roughly similar to like Ron Artest in LA, you know, when Ron was going 1-5. But back then it was tougher though, because like the 5s were just a different view. You know, Ron Artest today would be like a universal defender that would be unstoppable. But I'm pleasantly surprised by Draymond. I've never disliked him. I always thought that he was such an important piece to those teams. And the biggest thing that I think he figured out, and he figured it out at the right time for his career, is that he's not that good offensively, at least as a scorer. So if you look at the numbers, the way it went, like in the 2016, you know, the great year, it was the only year he ever averaged over 10 field goals a game. Shooting, obviously not making.
Wow.
You know, every other year, he's never shot he's never shot over 10 in any other year. This year, he's shooting six shots a game, making, you know, 3 of them. Less than a 3 a game. So he figured that shit out, because it's like, goddamn, you suck at 3s, dude. I mean, he does, but, like, not really, because that one year he was shooting, like, pretty well, and it was kind of weird for everybody to, like, watch him sort of do okay at it. You know, the issue right now is his free throws are down to 42%, but that's 10 games in, so, you know, he'll figure that shit out. But, dude, Draymond was always the glue, wasn't he?
Yeah, and it's one of those things, too. You talk about the Hall of Fame, he's a lock, I would say, and it's...
I wouldn't say he's a lock.
I like...
He's definitely going, but I don't think he's a lock by any means.
He's going to get the treatment of... I like that you bring up Rodman, because... it's that dynasty treatment. There's so few dynasties in NBA history that when you get one, they almost like guarantee 3 Hall of Famers to come out of them. And obviously you could say Durant is that third, but I think Draymond's the guy that was there for every single one of them. And that's where they're going to maybe just give him that edge. It's like the Spurs. You're going to get 3 with Ginobili, and the Bulls, obviously, Rodman is that third leg. The third leg in in Golden State. I think his stats are going to be arguable, no doubt, but his playoff performances will get him over the edge. I just also want to ask you, this year, as currently constructed with Klay coming back, do the Warriors have enough to win an NBA Finals? Because I think
no doubt, right? Dude, they've fucking been there already.
Yeah,
you know, they have nothing but motivation. They've been out of the limelight for how many years? When was the last championship? 2018.
Yeah,
right. They've been out of the limelight for 1, 2, 3, 4 seasons now. Right. I mean, it only makes sense at this point for them to just have that narrative, internal narrative, to make it.
And you have to look.
And I don't.
You have to look at it too as like, almost no matter what unfolds, they're basically winning the trade deadline. You know what I mean? It's not like every other team, you're going to be like, what was the, is that missing piece you could add? No one's adding somebody better than Klay Thompson.
Think about this too, when we're thinking about just, you know, the draft picks that we were talking about last year going into this draft. It was what? It was Mobley, it was Suggs, it was Cunningham. Scotty Barnes here and there, but who was the other name?
Kuminga.
They got fucking Kuminga, you know? And once he it's like, dude, it's the craziest shit to see, because all of these guys are playing with Steph Curry. Imagine if Kuminga takes what he can take from Draymond Green and that skill set. Jesus Christ. Because, I mean, Kuminga's got the same body type, relatively the same type of skill. He's a little bit more athletic than Draymond. I think he's a little bit more of a he's more scoring focused than Draymond. But if he can get a little bit of that facilitation ability from him, you know, and utilizing a high post type of offense, you know, and that kind of strategy, like, dude, this team's dangerous. It's clear they're dangerous, and it all starts with the fact that their fucking point guard is one of the greatest shooter ever. And he's been the greatest shooter ever for fucking 5 years already. Since he was in his 20s, he was already the greatest shooter ever. And now he's just cementing that consistently and just like reinforcing it with steel every fucking year. And it's clear that, you know, he's the best player on the court whenever he's playing. Again, I don't think that's ever changed. You know, the thing that people forget is when he was injured, it was a wrist injury. That's not as big of a deal. Wrist injuries are not that, like, it's not good to have it, but it's definitely not a foot or a leg or an ankle or a knee or a hip. It's a wrist. And when it's gone, it's gone. When it's over, it's over. You can rehab that shit. You don't have to run on it all day. And so, you know, he's back in full force. And that's just, it's just going to keep showing itself. I don't see the Warriors team taking a step back at all. I see them just putting the gas on everyone's neck all season.
I'm
here for it.
I think they're clearly a better team than the Lakers, and that says a lot.
Oh, dude,
I think they are.
Dude, clearly. The Lakers are fucking trash, and I hate to say it. They put a hodgepodge of just fucking has-been stars together, and I could eat my words, and maybe I will. I love Carmelo, so like I'd hope to eat my words, but like they put a hodgepodge of just bunch of these guys together, and they say, hey, let's slap this together and see if it fucking works. You know, maybe they get it together. Maybe they figure it out. There's only so many ways you can have this not work in all these different constructs. I mean, they didn't want to pay Caruso. Obviously, Caruso's not the guy, but he was definitely a great piece for them, right? They instead of doing that, they go for what, Russell Westbrook? How's he doing? You know, I know he's getting 20 a game, but what's he shooting, like 32% this year? Blows me away that they just give him the green light. Like, how is he greenlit every fucking game? Is he just that much of a dickhead that you can't tell him no? Is it really that bad with Westbrook? You know, that like that's how I think. It's like, how are you so sure of yourself that you're gonna shoot? How many times a game? 20 times a game right now. 19.7 field goal attempts per game, making less than 9 of them. You know, like, it's unacceptable. 44% shooting, 29% from 3, 68% from the free throw line. I've never been high on Russell Westbrook's scoring ability when he settles for shots. I'm obviously high on it when he's driving and being an absolute tenacious finisher, like we all know he can be. I'm even okay with him being a stat padding, you know, not very team oriented facilitator and floor general. But what he's reverted to now, or what he's kind of gone to, in my opinion, and you know, again, I will eat my words on any given day, and I'm cool doing it. What he's reverted to is one of the worst versions of himself that I've seen, and I truly, truly think that regardless of the fact that he's averaging 18 and 8, he's also averaging 5 turnovers a game, and I think he's bringing the team down. I think that he's actually making them worse.
I think everything going on there is making everyone involved worse. It's just
there's too many egos.
It's a circus, and
there's too many fucking egos.
How do you not expect that to happen when you put the roster together? That's what I don't get. It's easy to just put the pieces together like you're running a 2K franchise and hitting trade finder force trades and adding everyone together. Yeah, that's fun, but
it doesn't
work
like
that,
dude.
No,
they're acting like the fucking Yankees. They're acting like they can just put every fucking has-been star on the same team and compete. And it doesn't work like that in basketball. You're absolutely right. And the reason why is because when you have egos, you're competing for the same fucking ball on the same possession. And what are you going to do when you don't get the shot? Exactly. What are you going to do when Russell Westbrook has dribbled through his legs the last 12 fucking seconds and now he's shooting a 32-footer and he bricked it off the backboard? Like, what are you going to do when you see that happen more than once?
And what is the difference between them and the Warriors that we just talked about? The Lakers do not have a guy willing to do what Draymond Green has done all these years. That's one of the difference makers. You know what I mean? It's all guys that just they Russell Westbrook will never give up that scoring. He will never give up the 20 shots a game, just as you said. And that's the difference. If he was willing to take that backseat and work himself into a Rondo type of player on a winning team, that's a different story. But he's not somebody that's willing to do that. Therefore, you have inefficient shooting on the floor at all times when he's there. It's just not something that you're going to see long-term success with. I'd much rather be in the situation of a Golden State right now and the pieces that they have around working as a team like they always have, as opposed to the me style of the Lakers.
Now, one good thing I do like to watch is Carmelo Anthony's absolutely ripping it. Love watching him do well, dude. You know, 50% from 52% from three, shooting, you know, almost 7 a game, making over 3.5, averaging 17 points. I mean, he's obviously turned into just a pure fucking scorer,
yeah, he's,
like he always has been.
I heard of them talking about it this morning, I think on First Take, and he's about a shoo-in right now for Sixth Man of the Year. Almost a guarantee.
Yeah, I don't know how else anybody could get it.
Which honestly is unheard of.
Make any sense.
I mean, like did anyone expect that going into the season?
Dude, I mean, the thing is just like, I didn't know he wasn't going to start. First of all, I thought he might have had a chance at starting, you know, run 3-4-5, put AD at 5, you know, kind of sit Dwight. Like, you don't need half these guys on this fucking team, dude. Like, honestly, there's so many just 2008 stars on the same fucking team that it's a little absurd. But Carmelo is one of the greatest pure scorers that's ever lived. He's been doing the same thing over and over again since 2003, and he's been doing it at such a high level. And the reason why I wanted to bring him up initially was because he's a very similar mentality than you have with a Russell Westbrook. You know, Westbrook is absolutely unwilling to turn into a role player in any regards, right? At all. He has absolutely no desire to ever take any backseat to absolutely anybody and not be the main guy. And I think he knows right now that he's absolutely not the main guy. But Carmelo was always that guy too, where he was just, I'm going to score 20 a game. I'm going to score 25 a game. And it got to those later years in New York. And then, you know, I don't really like how the Knicks did him. you know, getting him out of there. But when he left and went to OKC, it was really just like, he's not that anymore, but he wants to be. And so that's the same mentality. This is still LeBron's team, and it's clear, you know, even though he was in street clothes for the last couple of games, like, it's still his team. And regardless of what happens around him, he's going to have, as much as people like to make jokes and say that's not actually true, he has managerial decisions that he can make. And if they're not going to do anything unless he signs off on it. You know, so it's really these guys, apparently, when they signed, the assumption that we all had is that they're willing to bite the bullet, swallow their pride, and be a backseat guy so LeBron can take the wheel. But from what I'm seeing with Russell Westbrook and what I'm watching when he's playing, he's not willing to do that. I don't think he'll ever be willing to do that. And it's going to hurt the team. It's going to tank the team. I can't see a scenario right now, especially in the West the way it's playing, with the Jazz and the Warriors and the teams that are going off right now. I can't see a scenario with the construct of the league and the Western Conference the way it is that the Lakers make this finals. I just can't see it. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me to even put them in the conversation. Not yet. They have to prove shit to me. I can be wrong, and I honestly, like, the way it's going right now, LeBron's not getting any younger. I kind of hope I am wrong. You know, get him another ring, I guess. That's all he really wants. But I don't know, man.
I don't see it. I really don't. I mean, you're looking at teams like the Jazz right now. We haven't brought up the Jazz really at all in any of our podcasts yet. They're running a train right now. They're going through everybody. Obviously this is what the Jazz do. They're the Western Conference regular season version of what the Sixers were last year, which both teams look like they're going to do the exact same thing so far this year. And it's the Jazz, though, if they can figure it out in the playoffs, which they didn't quite put it all together last year. If they can figure out in the playoffs, they're a problem. I would take them over the Lakers right now easily. The Suns are at some point going to get right back to the stretch that they were on last year and put together a streak that makes us believe in them again. I don't really think they're going to be an NBA Finals team this year. I think they regressed somewhat in the playoffs this year. But once again, they obliterated the Lakers last year. And what makes you see something out of the Lakers right now that proves they're any different, any better than they were last year, besides Carmelo exceeding expectations? That's really all. Even Memphis is so improved right now, and we'll get into exactly why. That Memphis, LA is not first round is not a walk in the park. That's a series that Memphis will be slight underdogs in.
If that.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on how much Ja starts taking off, because he's really being meteoric right now. You know, before we go into talking about him and a couple of these other guys, the last thing that I wanted to mention just about the NBA in general, which I really enjoy it. I know a lot of younger people, younger listeners probably don't like it as much as I do. You know, the averages are going down pretty drastically, scoring wise, across the board. We're seeing some of these guys struggling, and it has everything to do with these new rules, which are, to me, the best things that could have happened. And I think Silver got it absolutely right when it comes to pace of the game, when it comes to the, you know, the way that the game is played. I think it's going to get it back to basics, because this bullshit with fouls in the last few years has been getting out of control, right? I say it as a salty New York Knicks fan, just watching Trey do this shit to us last year in the playoffs, you know, for fucking five straight games. But it's not just him. It's Damian. It's Chris Paul is like one of the worst of it. You know, it's James Harden is the worst at it. You know, there's so many of these guys who pirouette their way to the basket, throw their hands up and say, hey, look at me going to the line. And that's not happening this year. Not as much. And honestly, the numbers are we're seeing it in the numbers. I don't want to talk shit on Damian, because I do like Damian Lillard, but goddamn, is he playing the worst basketball that he's played in a long time? He's not looking good at all. But it's got everything to do, I think, with this. He doesn't have, like, Damian doesn't have the and a lot of these guys, they don't have the fallback that they're used to. They're used to that fallback of like, oh, if all else fails, I'll just pump fake and jump into somebody and get a foul. And they don't have that, you know. You know, talking to Rashad, getting his like take on stuff. I don't think either one of us are very surprised by the way he's been playing. He's up 7 points per game over last year. He's averaging around the same in terms of assists, but he's got his scoring up. He's got up to a steal and a half. And you know, I'm watching him right now, and the amount of attention he's getting by this Hornets defense is just like, it's astronomical. You know, he's on the bench right now, but it's clear when he's playing that he is the sole focus, and this team's going where he goes. This team's going where he takes them. And it's nice to see it. And I think we said this last week, and I'll say it again. And I it's crazy to say it, and it would have been even crazier to have said it last year or the year before. But I'm pretty convinced, and I don't think that this conviction is going to change, that 2019 is going to go down as the Ja Morant draft.
Yeah, and it would take some drastic changes at this point to make me think otherwise. And, you know, I'll tell you, last season in the playoffs, I think they were in the – were they in the play-in game? Or, no, he got a full series, right? Did they win the play-in? Yeah. I remember seeing a full series out of Ja Morant last year in the playoffs and watching. Yeah, they won a game against whoever the one seed was. I think it was the Jazz. They won a game where Ja single-handedly put the team on his back. And I swear sometimes when you're watching playoff basketball, you see these peak performances from star players and breakout performers that just show you something to look forward to the next year. Their team might not win it all, but just that 1, 2, 3 games, that one playoff series shows you what they are, the potential they have. That playoff series, him in the big moment, just showed me all I need to know moving forward. I'll put all my chips in on a guy like Ja Morant, because when the lights are the brightest, you know that he's going to be not just an average, not just a good scorer. He's going to be a great scorer. He's going to do everything they possibly need to win the game. He's like a Damian Lillard. He's not going to shy away from that last shot. And he was one of the few players in the league last season in the playoffs that I saw that from. We have no idea if that's what Zion's going to be in the future. I already know what I have in Ja Morant. And
I mean, we know, I think it's because we haven't seen Zion this year yet, right? Like, all we're talking about with Zion is he got fat because he's not playing. I think it's unfair for us to go there with him. At least I have been going there, and I'll call myself out on this. Because, dude, the kid's – he's got a fat fucking body. Like, look at him. He's always looked like he's had it in him to be really fucking fat, you know, without running all the time, without all the cardio that goes into being a professional athlete. Like, he's got it in him to balloon. Look at Charles Barkley, dude, you know? Like, who's he compared to the most? Charles fucking Barkley. Look at him now, you know? So, Zion will be back. 26 a game is not out of the question for him. Maybe not this year, but definitely down the road. The problem with Zion, I've been saying it since he was fucking 17 years old, is that he's going to keep getting hurt. And I hate it. I hate that I'm right. But there's too much torque going on the lower extremities for that kid. Just too much, you know, and it's just going to take a toll. There's not a lot you can do about it, you know, and he just got what he needs to do is he needs to get his fucking paycheck immediately. The second that he gets that Supermax, that rookie max extension, he needs to sign that shit on the dotted line without even thinking, because it's not – there's just no guarantees with him. Ja, on the other hand, you know, it's very funny how there's always like a much more graceful – out of two different draft picks, there's always like a more graceful one that seems like it makes more sense in retrospect, but at the time, like, was not the pick anybody was thinking about. Like, Kevin Durant, Greg Oden's kind of the big one. Kevin Durant's like walking on water. He's like a swan just floating on the court. Greg Oden's like walking with a limp and shit, but he's still the guy you take because he's just so much better in terms of certain aspects. But Ja's just smooth. He's graceful. He looks like Derrick Rose, and when Derrick Rose was his age, just maybe a little bit skinnier. He's like slippery like Manu. I realized he's like an explosive Manu. It's really impressive to see what he's doing. The handle, I think it's better than it was. And he had a really good one before.
And it's the explosion is better than it was, too. It's like every game you watch with him, he just seems quicker. And everything is just – it's coming together more than it ever had, I think.
And it's funny because that's why he always gets the Russell Westbrook comparisons, because he just flies. He really does. He just flies off the fucking court, you know. And then it's going to be the kind of thing is like, who the fuck wants to play in Memphis? Honestly, like, sorry, Memphis. I think I've already made fun of this fucking town, but it's like, it's not fun. Memphis isn't a great town. It is what it is, you know. And it's not a good fan base. It's a good fan base, but it's not a good location for marketing purposes. I was very interested because I've always been pretty convinced that the lottery's rigged. I don't know why it wouldn't be. You know, like, it only makes sense to rig the lottery because it's like you want your players to go where it would make the most sense. But if anything was to convince me that it wasn't rigged, it would be 2019. Because I went Nola to fucking Memphis. The only thing worse would have been if it was Sacramento. If it was like New Orleans, Memphis, Sacramento got the 1-2-3. It's like, okay, well, they clearly don't care about the NBA anymore. Like, it's not – this isn't – you know, but it's gonna go down as a draft where we saw the talent in a kid overshadowed by the talent in another kid. You know, and we're not obviously done seeing Zion. The kid's a fucking beast, you know. He's going to be back. He's going to be just as strong as ever. He's going to probably have to tweak his game a little bit. I don't think he's going to be able to do the stuff he was doing before. He's going to have to be more of probably a stationary post, a little bit more, not too much. But like, he's got so much strength that he can do whatever the fuck he wants down low, so why not use it, you know. We've gone into LaMelo. So we'll leave LaMelo alone. Can you think of any other like next wave guys that have been kind of really showing their stripes this year?
I do want to bring up one guy that it was when I talked about the playoffs last year and what I saw out of Morant, there was another guy that sort of fit this script for me because I always just didn't know what exactly to expect from him if we were seeing more than he actually is at times in the regular season. And in the playoffs, we've seen enough now in two playoff appearances, I believe, that Donovan Mitchell is a star. And he is in that next wave, and he really doesn't get talked about as much. I mean, as a podcast, I think we should do him the service that we really don't talk about him much at all. Utah tends to be a boring team that we don't really – feel the need to discuss, but Mitchell has it, and he's right now having a career season that I think last year is the only year that where he had a higher point total, but he's basically doing the exact same thing, averaging 26 a game. If he keeps this up, he'll be an all-star yet again. And I just think 26?
Damn.
Yeah, exactly. It flies under the radar. It's not something I expected. But I just remember watching those series last year in the playoffs and seeing him pop off for like 35 points and just carry the Jazz to victory game after game. And it's like these guys are ready for the moment. It's that next wave of players. We saw it in the playoffs several times with Luka. We saw it with Trae Young. We're seeing it from Donovan Mitchell. We're seeing it from Ja Morant. Like, these are players that every single year just seem to put on in the playoffs. And you know, I think we're not far away from LaMelo Ball being that next guy to just – they're going to lose a playoff series as like an 8 seed, but you're going to see that like one or two games where he just pops off and shows that he's next up.
Well, the ball, Miles Bridges thing is going to be about as close as Peyton Kemp we're going to see in a while.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like the fucking absolute – I mean, I mostly Kemp for Miles Bridges. I don't think LaMelo plays anything like Gary Payton at all. But, like, you know what I'm saying, though? It's just he's got his guy who just absolutely just rocks the house every time he touches the ball. And Miles Bridges, who, as it stands right now, is one of the – probably the MIP, in my opinion. I mean, I think Ja should be more in the MVP discussion than MIP. to be completely frank. I mean, this team is playing very well, and it's completely on his back. And he's averaging, you know, 7 points more than he was before, 7 assists, 26 and 7 is definitely one of the better stat lines in the league, especially in a league, in a season where all the numbers are regressing. He's progressing, you know, comparatively. So there's going to be a lot of turmoil. Again, we always make the mistake of going into these storylines in like week 4, week 3. When shit is really just going to change so drastically before the All-Star break, you know, we're going to see what's going to happen. The consistencies are where we should focus. Donovan Mitchell is going to continue doing what he's doing, right? Because they give him the green light to do it at the very least. Ja is going to continue to do what he does. Are the Grizzlies going to play well? I don't know. Maybe, you know, unfortunately the Cavs last year were doing pretty well in the beginning of the season too. So when it comes to like a Mobley, you know, even if Sexton comes back, like none of the guys on that team are really at a place to win yet. So like all of this will revert to the mean to an extent. I just really think that it's so interesting now how if you were the Pelicans in 2019 looking back from 2021, is that Zion Williamson pick as obvious as it is then?
No. Simply put, no. I don't even
because pick. but that's the thing though, because it's like right now, you know, in recent like recency bias says obviously no, but when Zion comes back, gets back into playing shape, hopefully he does, and goddamn, I hope he does, and starts doing what he was doing last year, I still think it's Zion. I think you have to. It's the same concept as, you know, in 84. You have to take Akeem, even though Jordan's the GOAT. You still have to take Akeem, even in retrospect. Obviously, anybody would take, you know, Jordan now. But at the time, there is no reason why the Rockets wouldn't have taken him, right? And I think the same thing for the Pelicans now. When it's all said and done, Zion's going to be one of the better players in history. He just has to stay healthy. You know, it scares me to see him get hurt like this because with the hype that went behind this kid, you know, the amount of folklore that this would turn into if he just turned into an injury bug guy, be Bo Jackson level. Just Bo Jackson level. I mean, it would just be, the what if would be absolutely atrocious. You know?
Sam Bowie.
He's 21. Yeah, Sam Bowie's just hurt. He's injured though. Oh yeah. So it's the same concept. But so the last thing I wanted to talk about, Mark, is college, dude. That's just started last night. And we saw some of these, you know, Rashad made a good point on Twitter. He says people don't even watch college to watch it anymore. They watch it for the prospects. And, like, he's right.
Yeah.
But, like, I was definitely watching it for the prospects last night because there were some fucking prospects out last night. Let's talk about the two big ones. Like the 1-2 boys, right? Like number one, Paolo Banchero against Kentucky.
Yeah.
Fucking beast.
Dude,
fucking beast.
I watched that game and it was he had a really good game. I forget, like I think he finished with like 24, I want to say.
25.
Yeah, 25 and 7, 25 and 9. And it was more for me the eye test because I watched him play such a crisp game. It was like every move he made, every time he went through the paint, it was like a polished NBA vet. I swear, I have not watched somebody at the college level in their first game look like that in some time. Like, it was quite impressive. Quite impressive. I think he's a clear one-and-done first overall pick in the draft.
I don't think he's – I mean, first overall pick, one-and-done definitely. First overall pick, not as definite, mainly because for me – and I know this. He slipped on a lot of draft boards for whatever reason here, but I still like Chet Holmgren as the number one guy. Just because, I mean, here's my thing about him. Last night it wasn't the I think it was 14. No, he had like 11, 7, and 7 blocks. By the way, fucking 7 blocks. You know, I think he tied the record for blocks in a game by a Gonzaga player, period, and obviously by a freshman. 14, 13, six assists, right? One of those assists was off of a block where he just fucking snatched that shit through a full court outlet pass. That's what got me the most. You know, watching these guys do NBA caliber shit like that. You know, I the thing about the Chet that gets me is, yes, 7 feet tall, definitely needs to bulk up, right? 195 pounds, you gotta get
bigger.
That's
my concern.
He'll get bigger. Like, that's not a problem. We say that about absolutely every skinny guy going into the NBA. We said that about Porzingis. We said it about Dirk Nowitzki. They said it about Kevin Garnett. They said it about Kobe. They said it about Kobe when he came into the league.
Durant.
You know, they said about it. They say, dude, Kevin Durant, one of the bigger examples of that. I mean, they said it about Ja when he came in. Like, even, I mean, not for a long time, but they said about him too. They said AI was too small. Like, there's always going to be guys who are skinny coming into the NBA. It happens when you grow 8 inches in a summer. Like, you're going to be pretty skinny. He just needs to eat some pasta.
I don't know if I've ever seen a player with his prototype. The probably the closest thing, I guess, in the NBA is Porzingis. But it's bizarre. Like, I'm really curious. Last night, I think that was obviously Duke, Kentucky, and then the Michigan State, Kansas were the big appeals. But there were probably a record amount of people tuning into a Gonzaga non-conference 35-point favorite game last night just to see Chet.
Really, he kind of took the show. I mean, he didn't lead the game in scoring. 14 is, like, modest, you know, for a guy who's looking to be a top-five pick. But I just really thought, you know, the way that he was playing, the concern people have is his size. And if you're going to be concerned with his size, you got to see how he uses his size. And he clearly uses his size. He's playing much bigger than he is. You know, he's not afraid to go to the basket. And he's actually performing pretty well when he gets to the basket. That's the big thing for me, is that he's getting to the basket and he's not deterred and he's finishing. 6 for 9. You know, he's finishing. He can step back and shoot a jump shot. Like, those are big things, dude. Those are big things. He is a little older. He's going to be 20, you know, this year. I think he's already 19. I mean, it doesn't really matter. Like, who fucking really cares, you know? Like, he'll be 20 at the draft. Like, oh shit. Like, he's too old, which is insane, by the way. That's the thing.
Yeah, for a one and done.
Like, come on, guys. That's absurd. The only issue you have is his size. And, like, I have the same issue that anybody has, obviously, is his size. And you got to have it because it is pretty jarring, you know, when you see him. He's very small, very skinny. But he's gonna be one of the top talents that comes out of the draft next year. I just don't see any reason why not. But the one is, he's, you know, just to go down the list of, like, rookies to, like, second year guys to, like, the next draft class, the draft class after the next draft class. It's crazy to see somebody who's in college who's not eligible yet. But Amone Bates isn't eligible until 2023. I don't know. Did you watch him at all last night?
A little bit. I fell asleep probably like halfway through the game. But dude, the other thing is, like, there was so much skill on the floor between both teams. Kentucky, really, the amount of transfers Kentucky has was, I saw that graphic, like, in the beginning of the game. They have like 5 transfers from Power 5 schools after how horrible they were last year. But there was so much talent on the court, I was like, couldn't even keep track of who was who.
Yeah, I mean, that's just Kentucky for you, though.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to play for California.
They all look similar. Like, there were some strange haircuts on the floor last night. That is one thing I'll say about Kentucky.
You know, and it's just interesting. I know that they're all playing kind of for Coach K right now on Duke's side. But they really showed out last night against a very, very staunch opponent in Kentucky, and I was impressed. Banchero is definitely the leader of that team. He looks like he's 12, like he's got a real bad baby face. But he's gonna be a good fucking player.
Really
good. You know, there's two guys I want you to look up. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen them. First of all, you don't really have to look them up, but Amone Bates from last night, 17 points. You know, I know you've already seen him play, but it's funny because he would have been the clear number one pick in this draft, very obviously. You know, you take that guy. He's definitely like Kevin Durant reincarnated. The way he played last night kind of proved that. About 6'9", 6'10", handles the ball, you know, playing for Penny Hardaway. It's been clear that people love playing for Penny. You know, I don't know why anybody wouldn't love playing for Penny Hardaway.
Oh, he's the kid out of Memphis, right?
Yeah, Amone Bates.
Is that the one that was his? Did his mom get taken out on a date by a?
No, Drake? That's another guy named Amone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was funny. The kid's got like a fucking horrible hairline. I remember that.
Oh, that's the kid who was Bronny's teammate. Yeah, yep.
Amari Bailey. Yeah, and Drake took his mom out. That was funny. No, dude, Amone Bates is he's on Memphis. He's been in the public eye probably for about he was born in 04, so I would say about 5 years at this point. He's 17 years old. He's turning 18 in January. He started college early, so he could declare early. But they determined that he's not eligible for the draft next year, so he has to stay for 2 years. And so, like, if he were to go this year, just look him up if you haven't seen his stat lines yet, or at least watch him, you know, his college highlights. He would have easily been the number one pick. He plays almost identical to Kevin Durant, especially at his age. He's going to be a star. Like, there's just nothing about it. He's a bona fide, surefire star. And it's funny because, like I said, he would have been the number one pick in this draft, but he has to go in 2023, in which case he's almost definitely not going to be the number one pick because of the guy who's coming up next year. I don't know if you've seen Victor Wembanyama yet.
Mm-mm.
Ever heard of him?
No.
He's a French boy. He's a French guy. He's, I think, I want to say 7'3", 7'2", 7'3". He has a 7'9" wingspan. He's currently 17 years old.
Christ.
He's one of the – dude, I've, like, watching him even at his young age, you know, like the way he plays, he shoots threes with impunity. He shoots step-back threes. He plays defense, perimeter defense. He's playing professionally in France, and he's 17. And he is going to be the number one pick in 2023 when he's old enough. Which is funny because if that draft class goes the way it's going, 2023, as predicted, if it's going the way it's predicted, will be probably the best draft class, at least the top two guys that we've seen in a while. So that's something something quite interesting to pay attention to.
Yeah, I just looked up a picture of this kid. Holy shit. He is huge. Talk about skinny, right? Yeah, I mean, he makes Chet Holmgren look like he's fat. Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're both – I mean, when we get off here, just watch a fucking video of them, dude. It's the kind of stuff where, you know, you see a guy come up and you can see, like, there's flaws in his game that he needs to work on. And this kid obviously is no different. But have you ever seen someone this long? Are you looking at the picture of him with the two basketballs?
Yeah, the wingspan one.
Have you ever seen that before?
No, I mean, it's like...
They say it's 8 feet.
It's not even Giannis.
I don't know if they're right, and it has to be officially measured, but they say it's 8 feet. I mean, I believe it. I've never fucking seen anybody with a wingspan like that. You know, it's 7'9". That's still the longest ever. Right now, Gobert's got the long. What's up with these French guys with these long ass arms? What's going on there?
European.
He's tall. He's taller than Gobert, like significantly. Gobert's 7'2". Wembanyama is at least an inch taller than him, probably more. So by the end of it, the kid's gonna be like 7'4". You know. So it's going to be an interesting fucking draft class. I'm excited for that one because it's really going to be a case of Amone Bates is going to be the clear best player, I think, but Wembanyama is the highest upside. So, yeah, man. I don't know. I'm running out of shit to say. Do you have any last takes before we wrap it up here?
Last take, college basketball. from what I saw last night, Coach K retirement tour, I think it's a fucking, it's a bunch of phony bullshit. I'm not a Coach K fan, but Duke's probably going to go win the championship this year. They always choke it away in the tournament, but I think this is Duke's year. I swear to God, the talent I saw on that court, I know you were talking about him earlier, Keels, phenomenal player, and Banchero looks like one of the most polished prospects I've ever seen. Bet your tickets, Duke to win the national championship.
I don't know, man. I like Drew Timmy. I like the Timmy fucking Holmgren.
I'd like that, too. I mean, that would be a sick national championship.
It would. Yeah. It would be tough.
The problem with college basketball.
I don't know who wins that game, though. I know. It's so.
It'll never be that.
Random.
It'll never be
that. It's so fucking random. It's going to be some team that, like, gets good during the season.
Yeah.
And no one realizes. Like Iowa all of a sudden is, like, the number one team. And it's like, how the fuck did this happen? You know? It's always some shit like that. But
we love college basketball for the chaos. But it's the reality is the best team never wins because of the chaos. It's rare that's what happens. But
that's why brackets are such a huge thing.
Yeah, one and done is just tough.
That's why they make sense so much. Yeah, dude, when we get off here, dude, check out this Wembanyama thing. And for everybody out there, if you're not ugly, you know, stay beautiful. And we'll see you guys next week.